was not forthcoming. Where was the president? The Manchester, now New Hampshire, union leader, conservative newspaper tells us where the president should have been. A better leader would have flown straight to the disaster zone and announced the immediate mobilization of every available resource to rescue the stranded, find and bury the dead, and keep the survivors fed, clothed, sheltered, and free of disease. The cool, confident, intuitive leadership Bush exhibited in his first term, particularly in the months immediately following September 11, 2001, has vanished. In its place is a diffident detachment, unsuitable for the leader of a nation facing war, natural disaster, and economic uncertainty.
I'm back. It's September 8th, 2005, 6 p.m. Los Angeles time. And this is the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour from killradio.org here in Los Angeles. Well, to be honest, it was nice to get away, and I'm going to get away some more. The things that were going on, I mean, the Cindy Sheehan thing was happening during the while I was out there in the world. And then as I came back home, all this Katrina stuff happened. Man, I just don't know what... I don't even know how to begin with all this stuff. But that's what we're here for. So relax, light up a joint. Roll a joint and light it up. Let's be direct here. It should be mandatory to get stoned in these times. Press your ears up to the speakers and give a listen to the Impressionistic News Hour. You'll be glad you did. I just got back from a long trip, traveling around the Midwest to the Southwest, and drove about 5,000 miles. And I was coming back to California at the time of the hurricane disaster. But while I was out there, what I mostly noted over and over again that as I was traveling through things was a couple things. One, that this country is made up of little bubbles of population with massive space between each of those bubbles. That there is so much, there's more space than there is anything else in this country. There's just eternal miles and miles of just land. I even went through a stretch of 107 miles of absolute nothingness from Colorado into Utah. No towns, nothing. Just like the mountains of Mars or something. And that's the stuff that the interstate was going through. There's plenty of places where there's no interstate, there's no highways at all, and it just echoes on into space. And then among the humans, wherever I went, what I found were two things, and this wasn't true of other things. If I was on the FM dial and was looking for certain things there were a few kinds of positions held, but in general, in principle, there were two things that were constants. One was right-wing rhetoric, endlessly, on any part of the country you go to. That's what you hear on the radio. And the other was Christian radio. You don't hear that as much out here, though it exists, of course, in the Los Angeles area. But when you go out in the world, you'll find places where that's all you get, right-wing talk and Christian talk. And, wow. One. The United States has declared disasters in Alabama, Florida, Louisiana, and Mississippi in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Taken together, the 90,000 square mile disaster area would be the 12th largest state. This is the weekly news in review from Harpers.org and KillRadio.org. Thanks, Paul Ford, who posted this on September 6th. This is for the September 8th Impressionistic News Hour. Emergencies were declared in Colorado, Georgia, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Utah, and West Virginia. 80% of New Orleans was flooded after levees were breached by rising water. "I don't think," said President George W., "anyone anticipated the breach of the levees." Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said the disaster exceeded the foresight of the planners and maybe anybody's foresight. The flooding had been anticipated by National Geographic magazine, Scientific American magazine, the Times-Picayune newspaper, FEMA, and Mr. Bill. Condoleezza Rice attended a musical in New York City where she was booed. She also went shoe shopping. A fellow shopper was thrown out of the store after yelling, "How dare you shop for shoes while thousands are dying or homeless?" Dick Cheney canceled a trip to the oil sands of Alberta, Canada, and Senator Bill Frist called for a permanent repeal to the estate tax. President Bush decided to end his month-long vacation 2 days early and return to Washington, D.C. During his trip, Air Force One flew low over New Orleans. "This was a natural disaster," said Bush. The situation in New Orleans quickly worsened, but little help appeared. Shelters set up at the Superdome and at the New Orleans Convention Center became squalid, hot, and dangerous. The Louisiana National Guard patrolled the Superdome with machine guns as flood victims, locked behind metal barricades, shouted, "We need more water!" Cigarettes in the Superdome sold for $10 a pack, and a brisk market in antidiuretics, which allow people to avoid the overflowing bathrooms, developed. "We are like animals," said a woman. Shootings, carjackings, and looting were reported across New Orleans. Thousands of people, most of them poor, were stranded for several days. Many died waiting for rescue. "Nobody's coming to get us," said Aaron Broussard, president of Jefferson Parish, weeping. "For God's sake, shut up and send us somebody." The effectiveness of FEMA head Mike Brown, who was fired from his previous job supervising the International Arabian Horse Association, was called into question after he repeatedly claimed not to have known the severity of the storm or the location of several thousand refugees. "There is way too many freaking cooks in the kitchen," said New Orleans Mayor C. Ray Nagin. George Bush, said rapper Kanye West, doesn't care about black people. About 57,000 troops, many assigned to combat operations, entered the New Orleans area. "This place is going to look like Little Somalia," said a brigadier general. The Superdome and Convention Center were finally evacuated, but evacuees were not allowed to take their pets with them. "Snowball," cried a little boy after police took away his dog. "Snowball." It was announced that it could take up to 6 months for New Orleans to be pumped out and another 3 months for it to dry. Officials estimated that 10,000 people had been killed in the flood. About the same number of people remained in the city. 85 countries offered aid to the United States. Cuba offered 1,100 doctors. Cuba offered 1,100 doctors. Iran offered humanitarian aid. China offered $5 million, and Venezuela offered fuel at a reduced cost. The United States was performing a needs assessment to decide whose help to accept. Some Christian extremists declared that the hurricane was punishment by God. New Orleans now is free of southern decadence, said the pastor of the New Covenant Fellowship of New Orleans. And the sodomites, the witchcraft workers, false religion, it's free of all those things now. Many other Christians simply prayed. Meanwhile, in Iraq, nearly 1,000 Shiite pilgrims were killed during a march across... Damn it! During a march across the Al-Mali Bridge when rumors of a suicide bomber in the crowd caused a stampede. Most of the victims were women and children who died from trampling or after they fell or jumped into the Tigris River from drowning. President Bush declared that U.S. troops needed to stay in Iraq to keep the country's oil out of the hands of terrorists. Federal prosecutors accused eight officials from KPMG and a lawyer of conspiracy for helping wealthy people evade at least $2.5 billion in taxes, and a man named Glenn Allen Powell pleaded guilty to taking as much as $1.25 million in kickbacks in Iraq while working for Halliburton subsidiary Kellogg Brown and Root. Kellogg Brown and Root. Chief Justice of the United States William H. Rehnquist, asshole, died, and President Bush nominated John G. Roberts Jr. as a replacement, even as the Chief Justice. Just as he goes in, scientists announced that they had created mice that could regrow amputated extremities, and a plane crash in Indonesia killed at least 147 people. The Bush administration was working on a new set of pollution controls intended to make it harder to sue power plants. There was a condom shortage in Uganda. A UN representative attributed the shortage to restrictions placed on U.S.-provided HIV/AIDS prevention funds. Susan Wood, chief of women's health at the FDA, resigned over the FDA's refusal to allow emergency contraception to be sold over-the-counter in spite of scientific and clinical evidence fully evaluated and recommended by the professional staff here. Up to 12 more tropical storms were expected through November. National Preparedness Month. National Preparedness Month began last week. So that's it. See what a shithole this place is right now. And it's our own fault. This has been the weekly news and review for the Impressionistic News Hour. Thank you for listening.
Well, a couple more little hurricane details. The Army brought in 25,000 body bags to do the body recovery operation. And yesterday, the New Orleans area, they found 100 dead bodies in a warehouse where the people had been waiting for rescue. Even though that's all so bad news, we also have some good stuff happening right now. This Martin Scorsese film about Bob Dylan is causing a lot of attention on Mr. D. And the new bootleg series was just released yesterday. This is just about my favorite track, the very first take of Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat as a real raging blues with a couple of extra verses. Bob Dylan from 1966.
This is the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour. I've cast out a net and gathered some things up for you.
Question, is the union leader right? Should Bush have returned to the White House earlier? Pat Buchanan.
Union leader is exactly right, John. John, the question, who lost New Orleans, is going to be as serious for Bush's second term as 9/11 was positive for his first term. The president can be faulted. The administration can be faulted. They were asleep at the switch in Crawford. They were late getting there. They were not prepared. FEMA was not prepared. In addition to this, you've got the story of the National Guard being over in Iraq against the National Guard, should be down there. The levies were really not prepared. The Corps of Engineers were not properly funded. And already, I mean, the president should be criticized, but already this is being exploited politically, and the attacks are coming. And I think, John, this thing is going to divide us racially and politically and poison our politics, I think, for the rest of the Bush term.
On Friday morning at 11:35 in the morning, East Coast time, President Bush in Mobile addressed Alabamans and all Americans.
The federal government, John, is big and it's massive, and we're going to do it. Where it's not working right, we're going to make it right. Where it is working right, we're going to duplicate it elsewhere. Now, we have a responsibility at the federal level to help save life, and that's the primary focus right now. Every life is precious.
Do you think President Bush's appearance on the scene did anything to improve his handling of the situation on Lotta Cliff?
This was a moment for national leadership. He comes across more like a foreman at the local factory. And very rarely does the New Hampshire union leader speak for me. It's an arch-conservative newspaper, but I think they're right on point. On Tuesday, when the devastation was beginning to reveal itself, the president was in Arizona at a Medicare event, and then he went to San Diego to a naval base for yet another anniversary for the greatest generation, and I think he was mostly worried about oil prices. He didn't really relate to what was happening, and the slowness of the administration's response makes you wonder. This was a Mother Nature's disaster. But if we can't handle this, how do we handle a man-made event? We've had 4 years since 9/11. We have a Department of Homeland Security. Instead, Homeland Security and FEMA, the Emergency Management Agency, I think they're fighting about whether they should wear FEMA jackets or Homeland Security jackets. And the response, as the president correctly said, is inadequate.
Tony, I note that your newspaper wrote a strong editorial about the president. I want to hear about that. But do you think heads are going to roll over this? Who is advising the president this time to go forward with those addresses as though nothing had ever happened in Arizona and in California?
Well, as you know, very few heads roll in this administration. But, you know, yes, I did an editorial, lead editorial in our Friday Washington Times, which was critical of the president, not as harshly as the Manchester.
What was the POV?
Well, my sense is, and I think the building consensus is, that the whole bureaucracy led by the president and by the governors, et cetera, lost a step. They lost 24, 36 hours before the whole mechanism started coming finally together Thursday night. And yes, I think that there is a political price to pay under these circumstances. Now, the other piece of this is that everybody is now, all this opposition are coming in with the most extravagant and absurd. They're laying in every single political issue they don't like and laying it on him. Just one example. Avoided the silver bullet at that point. Everyone kind of eased back a little bit, and then the levees broke, and all hell broke loose. And I suspect that the bureaucracy, without the adequate leadership, kind of paused. It was in action mode, then went into inaction, and then went into. I think we lost 36 hours and a lot of lives.
You think he should have raced back, called the cabinet meeting together?
Oh,
This is a response to the hurricane from a hip-hop group from Baton Rouge. This was just recorded this week, and it's called New Orleans Is Gone, and it's by Killer Mama. Thank you, Joel Hoover.
The city of New Orleans will never be the same. I need reinforcements. I need troops, man. I need 500 buses, man. We're talking about, you know, one of the briefings we had, they were talking about getting, you know, public school bus drivers to come down here and bus people out here. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. This is a national disaster. Get every doggone Greyhound bus line in the country and get their asses moving to New Orleans.
Continue on the lane, all place blame. Floating in the tail of Katrina, the hurricane. We're talking rain, wind, and water. You know that this is fierce, cause it hits harder than any other winds. Two scales are the same name, Andrew, and the others that blew through to New Orleans was scorched. Not with a flame, but with a flood. Hey, God up above, where's the love? Selected and purging a city of sinners for the ones that didn't escape. Scavenged for dinner, fighting the feces. We save them from theses. We need supplies, no media lies. They report on the poor, looting for the store. You might wanna smile, you might wanna cry, but this is the time that we say goodbye.
Control, because we had most of our resources saving people, thousands of people that were stuck in attics, man, old ladies. When you pull off the doggone ventilator vent, you look down there and they're standing in there in water up to their freaking neck.
So what do you do after Katrina hits you? Left you no home, no fuel, no shoes, no food. Reality's hitting you as you watch your wife drown in an attic room. It's a natural disaster. Visuals of death will capture churches cursing at the master. Blast off toward the cities above as we open our arms and we're sharing our love. But you're bringing the violence. Our riots need to steal, cause you know you can't buy it. Excitement is rising and climbing, but the ration of food is declining. I'm eyeing starvation, desperation, city traffic, contamination, erasing to find an answer to about what the hell are we supposed to do.
New Orleans is down. Come on, come on. New Orleans is down. Come on, come on. Drugs flowed in and out of New Orleans and the surrounding metropolitan area so freely, it was scary to me. And that's why we were having an escalation in murders. People don't want to talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it. You had drug addicts that are now walking around this city looking for a fix. And that's the reason why they were breaking in hospitals and drug stores. They're looking for something to take the edge off of their Jones, if you will. And right now, they don't have anything to take the edge off, and they probably found guns. So what you're seeing is drug starving crazy addicts, drug addicts that are wreaking havoc, and we don't have the manpower to adequately deal with. We can only target certain sections of the city and form a perimeter around them and hope to God that we're not overrun.
Let me tell you about the part of the speech they left out when Ray Nigga was talking what Bush was about. $8 billion for Iraq in an instant. 9/11 came and there's a warning. We missed it. When this thing hit. We had had notification that it was time to split. Stuck up on your food and your water. Sorry, everybody, no party in the French Quarter. Get the commission to pack 1,000 people out of homes. What was the terror alert then? Why wasn't help immediately rushed in? Where was the National Guard? 5 days later, water rises in the backyard. Bodies floating everywhere. Spreading disease and infection in the air. Nigga made calls to federal aid, but he got the runaround. His request was delayed. When Bush finally touched down on Gulf Coast turf, he didn't even come to New Orleans first.
both for PR 101 and because you want to be back here. I think you should have come back a day.
You think his circle of governors is getting too narrow or had always been too narrow, that he doesn't reach out enough?
John, he should have sent in the 82nd Airborne by Tuesday. When you hear that there's looting and people are being shot and they're cleaning out stores and they're carrying guns, that's what we did in Newark and Detroit when we had those terrible times. Yeah. There are poor people are threatened in there, and they're predators, and the airborne should have been in there. They could have been in there 12
there
hours.
There is a demographic dimension to this, social, economic, and racial, and Elijah Cummings, Democratic congressman from Maryland and former chairman of the Black Caucus, took the issue of the social, economic, and racial status of those who were trapped in the city.
The difference between those who lived and those who died in this great storm and flood of 2005 was nothing more than poverty, age, or skin color.
Clarence Page, what are your impressions? What are your impressions of what the congressman says?
Well, anybody who watched the coverage this week could certainly see that the most miserable stories, and as well as those who were dying in the streets suffering through this, were primarily black and poor. We know that New Orleans is, 62% black, of which about 25-30% are below the poverty line. This is not new.
They were trapped. They couldn't get out. They didn't have $50 or $5 even for a hotel room.
That's the key. You know, the key word here is preparedness. And when they decided to make evacuation the central part of the storm response plan, somebody should have thought that, hey, maybe 100,000 to 200,000 people wouldn't have cars, wouldn't be able to get out. And that's the kind of thing that we saw the residual effects of here. They were directed to the Superdome. Superdome was not safe and it didn't have the facilities. They were directed to the convention center and they got there and there was no food, no water, not even a guy with a clipboard over there.
Can you talk a little bit more about the racial dimension of this? Why is it that there's a correlation between the black and the poor?
Well, that's the case in most American cities, with the exception of places like Los Angeles, where it's mostly Hispanic and poor.
But
Washington, D.C. is over 60% black and heavily poor. That's the thing, John. If we have another disaster, which will happen in some big city, whether natural or man-made, we got to think in these plans about the underclass or the people, the elderly, the sick, the immobile, or the people simply don't have
money. Are the poor because they're black?
In America?
In New Orleans.
Well, you know, we'd be nuts to say race wasn't a part of it. But, you know, what are the impressions? Tony's talking about just PR and the impression that the whole world gets watching these news pictures. You see...
How high is the water, Papa? She said it's 4 feet high and rising. Hey, come look through the window pane. The bus is coming, gonna take us to the train. Looks like we'll be blessed with a little more rain. 4 feet high and rising.
The overwhelming number of people you see are black.
It looks as though we have apartheid in this country when you look at those television pictures. That is the image that comes across. If you were poor black, you couldn't get out of the city. And the war gamers, the people who war gamed these scenarios as recently as a few months ago, knew that there would be 100,000 people left behind who couldn't get out. You needed to provide buses to get them out. The president should have declared a state of national emergency and emptied out the military bases from Texas. Let me finish the sentence before you tell me I'm right. And emptied out the military bases from Texas. That's what
the point of this was. Look, they were not unprepared because these folks were black. Look, the poor down there, 67% of the city is black. Probably 90% of the poor folks are black. But the FEMA was unprepared. It had nothing to do with race. It had to do with guys not being prepared, not on the job. And I think it is grossly unfair to suggest, you know, we left them behind. There's no doubt those who had the least...
Anarchy spreads.
In Katrina's wake, looting has been widespread. In New Orleans, looters sacked shops and stores to get food, water, clothing, even electronic goods. An entire Walmart gun section was robbed. One New Orleans police officer was shot in the head by armed looters. Two officers caught on a rooftop exchanged shots with armed gangs. In Mississippi, people scavenged, ruined casinos, and plundered slot machines. Thievery was widespread. One reason given was the police and the National Guard personnel were in short supply. Many Guard members have been called up in active duty and deployed with the armed forces in Iraq. Police units throughout the South are also short-staffed because many local police are also military reservists and have been called up.
The lawlessness has expanded. Bodies have been found riddled with bullets. Women have been raped. Gunmen are roaming the streets in trucks, firing shots at police. Some police officers have drowned. Others have turned in their badges. Question, what do you think the international community thinks when it sees these scenes on television this week? I ask you, Tony.
Well, I don't think there's any question that they think we don't look as masterful at controlling situations. They think of us as we can do anything, and obviously things got completely out of control. And I suppose we look a little less formidable both to friends and enemies now than we did a week ago.
Somalia called us up and found out whether asked us whether we could, they could help.
Salvador. I know. I want to make one point about the previous segment. It's all known. There's a book written in 1989 that describes that the poorer you are, the lower you live elevationally in New Orleans. So right. By chance, and poor people always live in the worst part of town in any city, but it happens in New Orleans, the poor part of time is the lower part of town. This is a product of living patterns for generations there. You have a black Democratic mayor there, you have a Democratic governor there, and to lay all of the problems of race in Louisiana off on George Bush is really appalling.
George Bush is going to be able to do for New Orleans what he wants to do for Iraq? Namely, restore stability, rebuild the infrastructure. You think he'll be able to do that?
The point is that the rest of the world looks at us and says, where do we get off telling other people how to live?
Democracy in action?
Well, the governor is saying she's expecting 40,000 troops, which I think began arriving today. That puts in perspective how many troops you need to control a situation like this, and it also is a great contrast to the fact that we never had enough troops in Iraq either.
The impact of who lost New Orleans is Americans are not going to look abroad. They're going to look inward.
Right.
They're going to be looking to the United States.
Right.
The president's war policy, in my judgment, is in deep, deep trouble. Now, Tony's got a point there. Plenty of National Guard down there they could have used. It was mishandled. Maybe some of their equipment was there. But they had enough American troops and local troops. But Americans are going to say, look, we got people suffering and dying in New Orleans.
Right.
We got our borders unprotected. We're worried about the border of Syria. We're worried about the Persian Gulf.
Right.
When the Gulf of Mexico is our concern.
What about isolationism? Is that going to be on its way back?
Look, there people are going to say...
President Buchanan,
yes.
I hear it.
You mean...
I don't believe we should isolate...
You mean we are overcommitted abroad? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying is people are going to say, what do we got troops over there in Central Asia and Iraq and the Balkans? We need them right here in the United States of America.
We can't police at home because we're policing abroad.
Let me make a quick point here. The president's got plenty of problems, both the responsibilities...
No
New
kidding.
Orleans ...and political. But as the American public sees his opposition trying to use this to take an unfair shot at every issue, whether it's PACs on the border, yours on Iraq,
you think the opposition is generating this outrage?
No, exactly not. I'm saying...
Let him
finish, please, Eleanor.
Let him finish. Going on for quite some distance and major point.
Let me finish. No, my point is the president is in a deep mess, but the opposition may misplay it by overplaying their hand and accusing him of even more than he's responsible for.
Where is this great opposition? Unless you're counting me, no prominent Democrats are out there criticizing the president personally.
That's not true. Schumer was out there.
The head
of the Democratic Congressional
News,
campaign committee.
News pages.
He said war was too important to be left to the general. When he said that 50 years ago, he might have been right. But today, war is too important except to politicians. They have neither the time, the training, nor the inclination for strategic thought. I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids. Mandrake, do you recall what Clemenceau once said about war?
No, I didn't think I knew something. No.
He said war was too important to be left to the generals. When he said that, 50 years ago, he might have been right.
We cannot let terrorists and rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile.
I think war is a dangerous place. Nobody can threaten this country. Oh, they may be able to bomb a building. You know, let me talk about Al-Qaeda just for a second. I made the statement that we're dismantling senior management in DR. Our people have done a really good job of hauling in a lot of the key operators. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Abu Zubaydah, Ramzi Al-Shib, or whatever the guy's name was. And we're fully committed to working with both sides to bring the level of terror down to an acceptable level for both. I couldn't imagine somebody like Osama bin Laden understanding the joy of Hanukkah. The ambassador and the general were briefing me on the vast majority of Iraqis want to live in a peaceful, free world. And we will find these people. And we will bring them to justice. You're free. And freedom is beautiful. And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos and order. But we order out of chaos, but we will.
Now, I gave up on Orthodox religious belief a long time ago. But I've, especially since I discovered William Blake, I've come to believe that what we call God is really the human imagination, because the imagination really, literally, is the infinite part of all of us. And if the concept of God is anything, it's infinite. So that which touches that part of us, that's holy, the human imagination. I believe in human potential. However, my faith in human ability to make things right is just continually being shaken. It's sort of burning me out of doing the news. I want to take some time off from it because everything is so negative when one examines what's happening on a social scene. The dominant movement of this country and this civilization that we're living in is like a juggernaut, and it's moving in ways that are constricting and destroying the things that I find valuable in my life, the beauties of art and the beauties of that kind of social interaction. What do I ascribe this to? Well, let's put it in the social condition. Let's call it capitalism. Because I believe that what we're seeing with the Bush administration and the response in this hurricane is exactly the end result of a capitalist movement which puts money and profit above anything else. You know? And it's just going on. It destroys all levels of society. It destroys any kind of creative response to it, because its power is involved with things that are not real values to you or me. Profit, you know. I mean, you know, you probably hear it all the time, and especially if you're young, you've grown up with these value systems that more or less came on full-fledged in the 80s, as with Reagan in office, and have just run worse and worse and worse since then. Does this mean it's going to be the end of the world? No, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that it's getting harder and harder to respond to it because it's so potent. It sweeps everything in its path. And the physical destruction of New Orleans is a great example of this. And Mississippi, I mean, they've already found 200 dead in Mississippi, so it's not a... there were 9 in Florida or something. But the planet is being devastated by a process that, I don't know, the heads of corporations, the executives, the businessmen, the factory owners, the people who hold and manipulate power, because they hold and manipulate wealth, effectively control everything that we hear and see. And they care nothing for the future of life. They care nothing for the planet that they live on, even though it's the future of their own children and grandchildren, so long as they can continue to amass capital during their own lifetimes. Right-wing politicians, lacking all true moral sense under cover of a repressive and discredited traditional morality, fulfill the function of sustaining and fostering the perpetuation and growth of the government by the rich and for the rich, which they hypocritically call democracy. The collapse of communism in Eastern Europe, initially hailed as a positive thing, has brought in its wake a spiritually devastating consequence. Look what's happened over there. The much vaunted victory of capitalism, as Gorbachev called it, socialism with a human face, he actually said, it's become obvious that capitalism itself is unreformable. We can't change it. Despite all the dismay and the warnings, the rich just continue to get richer, the poor poorer, the environment more polluted, the ozone layer more depleted. Things that cause this. Look directly into look directly into what happened here. If I can compare things, I was part of the 1994 Northridge earthquake, which was a disaster, not anywhere near as heavy as the one that's happening in the Gulf, but nonetheless, it was a disaster. And because Bill Clinton's FEMA was there, they were running things smoothly within hours of the disaster. Now, it's obvious that if we had another earthquake right now, today, in Los Angeles, that killed thousands of people and destroyed a lot of property, nothing would be set up, because the ineptitude of the federal government is now plainly visible. Their priorities are screwed up. They're off fighting invisible terrorists who were no threat to us whatsoever. So they create an environment that's causing terrorism to thrive and grow. So that their priorities were so wrong that they screw that up, and then they don't protect us here. But of course, that's because people in the federal government, the Bush administration's main people, don't think that the federal government should have any job protecting the average citizen. That's not what the feds are here for. It's not to educate. It's not for Social Security. It's not to, you know, give money to people. It's not what it's there for. It's there to control, to be in the center, and to help the states. And the states do everything else. And they probably don't even believe in the states controlling, helping people and education and all that. Rush Limbaugh was, I heard him yesterday going on about how the welfare state creates poor people, and that New Orleans was a terrible place because it was a welfare state. There's no compassion. There's no understanding. There's only stupidity. I don't know how to address it otherwise. We cannot have false hope. We have to resist the lure of you know, falsely believing that something good will come out of things. That's one of the reasons why I can't support Christianity, because that's false. There's no real hope there. Certainly, people working together can help things, but it doesn't change the overall path. Christianity has changed nothing of the horrors of what capitalism has ended up with for us. So the thing is, do we just give up? There is always, as a last refuge, one's own self-respect and To give up fighting back is to lose your own self-respect. The dominant movement may appear overwhelming, but struggle still exists. In some ways, it's stronger than ever, though it doesn't seem to be affecting the media because that's already controlled. But we need to get people to be better informed, and maybe we can do something about it. I don't know. There are daily reports of the growth of revolt and protest in the world, from all corners of the world. Maybe we can get through it. But there, briefly, is sort of a take, and also sort of gives why I'm sort of burning out on this. I feel indifferent to a lot of this suffering because, well, we knew it was coming.
Presidential and superpower ass-kicking afternoon to everyone. Don't turn your TV off just yet. I brought some eye candy. Condoleezza Rice.
Mr. President. I love him. I really do.
I'm not joking. I love you.
I love you because you're smart. You're black. I don't know anything about either one of those things. Today's about something different. We're talking about the new addition to my cabinet, you know? Now I'm going to talk about my Home Depot kind of cabinet. I'm talking about my people who order me around kind of cabinet.
If I may, sir, I'd like to add that I wholeheartedly agree with your choice, as I wholeheartedly agree with you on everything. And I do love you.
Calm yourself, please. Please welcome our new national security advisor. Right on my hand here. Agawada Duder. It's one of those tough foreigner words, you know?
What? I can't hear you so good. Rohit, are we on the camera?
Yes, Bhagyavati.
My husband Rohit is on the camera.
Hello, United States. I love the new episodes of Remington Steel. This is a very good show. Hello to the Pierce Brosnan. He is good.
Oh, very good.
And Irish and good. I like.
Well, as you know, money in America is tight due to the Iraq War and President Bush's inauguration party last January. So the job of National Security Advisor has been outsourced to me in India.
Outsourcing is a good idea.
Oh, it's a very good idea. If you love it, I love it.
We all love it, Condi. If the national security job stayed in your country, it would cost taxpayers nearly $200,000 a year. But I am doing this same work for 18 cents a day.
See, hot zig. Everybody wins.
Even though I am in India, just think of me as being in your own backyard. Oh, and this is my cow, Raja. She inhabits the soul of my dead Uncle Kumar. She is going to help me look for terrorists. And when we see one, we will email you. My screen name is Hot Curry for You at AOL.com.
I cannot wait to find out who shot JR next week. Don't tell me. Whatever you do, don't tell me.
JR got shot, man. I'm still worried about who shot Mr. Burns.
What is that, Raj? Oh, okay. You are now on red alert. Goodbye.
Did she just say we're on red alert?
Correct, sir.
Whatever. Listen, evildoers, EDs, I got a bomb with your name on it, you know? I'm gonna kick your ass. East side, west side, GW side, biatch.
I bet Bush wishes he could be like that. Now, everywhere you turn, you're hearing all kinds of stuff about helping the rescue relief for Hurricane Katrina. Every radio station, every TV station is telling you where you can go to donate money. I hear that there's truckloads of supplies that were supposed to have left from Glendale yesterday that hadn't gone yet. Hopefully they're gone by now, because the trucks to pick them up never arrived. Well, we at Kill Radio want to remind you about the animal victims of Katrina, because we have I'm a number that I can give you and some information so that you can, if you would like to, if you could open yourself up to do it, we give transportation provided for people ready and waiting for upwards of 200 dogs and 150 cats that have been rescued from the devastation. These animals need a place to go. They need kennels or boarding or vet offices, shelters with extra space, foster homes, rescues. These animals have been vaccinated, are in good health considering the conditions. They're not sick animals. They need homes, okay? And if you care, you can contact Linda. At her cell number is 203-515-3024. Or you can write to Linda, L-Y-N-D-A, at port1.com. That's P-O-R-T-O-N-E.com. Linda, L-Y-N-D-A, at port1.com. You can contact her anytime. And if you think that you can put up with some animals who need help, please give her a call and see if we can do something about that. Besides helping everybody else who needs to be helped. Because, goddammit, that's what we're here for, to help each other. And also, if you're up to party out tomorrow night here in Los Angeles, at the Greek Theater, 7:30 p.m. George Clinton is going to P-Funk it all night, and that's going to be a great show. Did an interview with George the other day with Hassan, and he's terrific. I've seen him many times, and he's terrific. And it's, the opening act is a little band called the Red Hot Chili Peppers. So you might want to think about heading over there. I think there are still a few cheap seats, so you might want to see the show. And let's see. Here we go. Back to that. Okay. Anything else that I need to tell you? I guess not. Again, I'm really, I actually really am worried about what's going to happen when we do have another earthquake. There were a series, big series of earthquakes in the Mojave just last week, about 600 earthquakes over 3 or 4 days. And some of them were big, some were up as high as 5.1s. So we do have some things to expect here, don't you know? But I bet you didn't expect that. So that's it. The Thursday Impressionistic News Hour. I'm going to do one more news hour next week, and then I'm going to take a hiatus. I may be back in January, but I'll do one more next week. I'll do another experiment in terror for your ears and your concatenation. This is KillRadio.org from Los Angeles, and we're here to get under your skin and maybe even make your nose bleed sometimes. I guarantee you that if you haven't spent a lot of time with Kill Radio, you should, because it's the best radio station. Anything goes, and anything happens. Everything happens. So come back Saturday nights. I'm not going to leave the Chill Room, my music show. It's where I get to be the most creative. So I'll be hanging out there for a while longer. In the meantime, try not to get too depressed. And remember, it's always somebody else's fault, except when it's yours. Thanks for listening to Kill Radio from Los Angeles. Don't forget to kill your friends.